At Sierra, discover top workout gear at incredible prices, which might lead to another discovery. Your headphones haven't been connected this whole time. Awkward. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
Welcome to The Compound, hosted by Ian Happ.
It's a grand slam for Ian Happ. What a play, Ian Happ, into the Ivy.
And Dakota Mekis.
6'7", 250-pound Mekis. Swing and a miss, struck him out, struck him out, struck him out.
Welcome back to The Compound Podcast. This is episode 292. 292 of The Compound Podcast, presented by our friends at Parse Rum. Go to Benny's, get your Parse. Everybody in Chicago could have had a whole bottle of Parse last night. What a day for the city. What a day for the city.
Real quick about Parse before you poop on me. My grandma today, who doesn't drink, was asking me. She loves this podcast. She doesn't drink, but she's like, where can I go buy that Parse? I just want to buy the Parse and take a picture with it. I was like, I don't know if they really sell it around here, Grandma. I go, also, what would you do with it? She's like, I would just pour it out. I was like, you want to buy Parse rum to take a picture with it and then just pour it out? She's like, yeah. I was like, I'll see what I can do for you.
More people should do that. More people should do that.
I was like,
I thought you should just send in a picture. You know, we could just post the picture without the Parse. We can make an exception for your grandmother.
Yeah. I was like, you can give the bottle to me. You don't have to pour it out. I will drink it.
If you want to go get a bottle of Benny's, go get it at Benny's. And then instead of pouring it out, gift it to a friend.
There we go.
Honestly, though, we don't care. Once you buy it, do whatever you want with it. If you want to pour it out, pour it out.
Your choice.
A sale's a sale.
It was a monumental day in Chicago yesterday.
It was.
Blackhawks won and the Bulls won, which was really the headliner.
Yeah, that's what everyone was thinking.
Cubbies sign Alex Bregman, and the Bears have an all-time playoff comeback win against the Packers.
Well, that was the best part, is it went from, like, Bears were down, I think, like, 21-6, and then it's, like, the news broke of Bregman signing, and then the Bears come back and win, and then, like you said, Bulls and Blackhawks win. It's like, what a day for the city.
What a day. I'm headed up there next week. It's going to be absolutely electric for CubsCon. City's going to be buzzing with the Bears having another home playoff game next weekend.
Did you hear Zach told me today, I had to be like the mayor or something, like for the whole city of Chicago, maybe Tom would know, Ubers were free on Saturday night. Like however they set it up, like you could Uber for free.
I believe the Bears paid for people's.
The Bears paid for it
from the stadium. I saw something about it. I didn't fully look into it.
Yeah,
respectfully, it was a $480 ticket to get in, so that was the minimum price on SeatGeek. So I wasn't going. I wasn't I opted out.
Still, cool thing for them to do though. Of like, sure. Hey, this is sick. Like, we haven't done this in a while. Everyone get home safe.
I think it's one of my favorite parts about moving and getting to experience different parts of America is growing up in New York. You don't get to ever really experience this because we have multiple sports teams. So there's never a time where the entire city gets behind one team. The entire city loves the Bears. This is a football town, I would say. Just from my experiences covering it a little bit with Marquee, getting to experience some of that was really cool. And I mean, this has been a season of destiny for the Bears. And the fact that, like, when the first half was happening, I was like, this is the most classic Bears comeback of all time. It's setting up so well for the Bears comeback. And then there you go, the second half, Bears comeback. Ian's got the sweatshirt on now. Dakota said he's not upset. We had a long discussion before the show. He said he's not upset, but he said next week if the Bears win, that's going to be the thing that'll upset him.
So we'll get to Bregman. You know, that's secondary right now. We're talking Bears. We're Bears talk here. This is a Bears pod. I will say I talked a lot of trash, and I will continue to do so, and hopefully they will eventually lose. I was talking to my buddy who's from Chicago, huge Bears fan. I was even sending out, like, go Pack go texts. That's how into it I was. But the thing is, I texted you guys yesterday. I'm dead serious when I tell you the game started and I couldn't root for the Packers. It's just not in my blood to ever root for the Packers. I wasn't rooting for the Bears either. I was rooting for a good game. And the whole first half, there's a little bit of a sparkle in my eye too of like, wow, this is crazy. Ben Johnson was insane with some of his, like, going for it on, like, 4th and 6 on his own 25 in the second quarter. I was like, this guy is a maniac. And at halftime, his press conference, he goes, well, he essentially said, our defense can't stop him. So when we're on the field, we need to score. And I was like, well, that's a good point. But It was an unreal game. It was fun to watch. That's all I wanted. I always like when the Packers lose. There was no possible way for both teams to lose. So it was a lose-lose game for me no matter what.
I can't imagine. I was in the stadium for the last Packers comeback. I can't imagine after that one in the playoffs. That must have been just insanity.
You got to get on the PCA program. He was on the field pregame. Yeah, this guy's like living in Chicago sports lately.
Yeah. Hey, he's definitely going to be there next week too.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I will fully admit I sold it on like wanting the Packers. I still hated the Packers. I am fully behind either whoever they face. It'll either be Eagles or Rams. I will absolutely be rooting for them to dominate the Bears.
Why can't you just root for your division, man? Root for somebody from your division to go win it all.
I can't. One, I can't be rooting for them to go farther than the Lions did last year, because if you lose, I can just be like, oh, nice. You guys made it to the same thing we did last year. Congrats. What does that get you? A worse draft pick. Congrats. Two, the division thing? No. No chance. You're telling me when you lost to the Brewers, you sat at home, watched the NLCS, and said, go Brew Crew. Not on your life would you would say that. Because it's not true. It's just not true. True or false?
Imagine Ian in watching the NLCS with his little Brewer helmet on.
Yeah. The Brewers, Brew. No one, you don't root for in division. This isn't
there,
like
there have been times when we've missed the playoffs where I've rooted for our division.
I guess I see that, but not to win at all.
You would root for the Cardinals? You would root for the Cardinals.
Not to win at all.
There's lines. No, I don't think you'd root for the Cardinals.
No. There's no way.
I'm going to move on from this topic.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
All right. This is a big episode. We got to get through a lot here. We got the Bregman deal, and then we got the Cabrera-Casey trade. Let's start Bregman. Start with the most recent.
Okay.
I mean, how it was introduced was incredible, but do you think the only thing I thought about was, If they'd somehow just not told anybody, they could have brought him out on stage at CubsCon like a pro wrestler, and it would have brought the house down. And I was like, I would have loved to have seen that. That would have been the most incredible way to do it.
Do you think it's possible?
The second best way, though, how it turned out.
To keep
out.
It quiet for that long would have been unbelievable.
I was going to say, do you think that's possible, though, for like no one to hear the rumblings or no one to see Alex Bregman in the city of Chicago, like flying it? Like people would have seen Bregman at the airport and been like, Alex Bregman's like, there were the tweets.
PJ man.
It's a good point.
You know, now,
tinted
now,
windows in the car. Who knows?
How was it announced?
Tweets.
It just came through from a tweet, but it was like right during the middle of the Bears game. It was kind of, it felt like, I think it was 21-9 maybe when the tweet came. So it felt like it was kind of at the turning point when the Bears started to do their usual, here the ship's turning around and we're coming back.
Yeah.
It's hilarious that like all this stuff gets like tweeted out and leaked and everybody knows that the deal's been made, but obviously the team can't announce it.
Yeah,
it's like not official because they're like pending physicals and everything.
Paper.
Yeah, but let's talk about it. 5 for $175, $70 million of that is deferred, so that's taking the AAV, average annual value, for luxury tax purposes to like 30 to 31, somewhere in there.
I still don't understand that, because if 70 million is deferred, that's 5 for $105. So that should be like 20 million. So how does that work?
So it's the present value of the contract. So there's a present value calculation depending on the deferment schedule. So if the money's deferred, we haven't got the deferment schedule yet because it's nothing, none of that's public. So if the money's deferred for the 5 years after the contract, then maybe that number's a little bit higher. If the money's pushed back, like I think his Boston deal was like, it's paid out over 10 years after the last year. So that's how Shohei's is too. So that changes the deferment schedule a little bit. And then the present value would not be as high the farther the money's deferred out. So it's all a calculation to get how much those dollars are worth in today's money. And then they base the luxury tax AAV off that number.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, it felt like it had to be some deferment in there once the deal came out. I think is it the richest contract the Cubs have ever given?
Second.
Who's third? First? Jay Hay and Swanson.
Jay Hay and then Dansby and then this. Dansby's, I think, 177 and Jay Hay was 180 something.
Okay. I mean,
from an AAV perspective, I think probably from average annual value, it's the highest. We talked about this a month ago, about how a right-handed bat would fit into our lineup. And we kind of used the example of Bregman. I wrote out the lineup a couple times right before we started. Lineup got deep in a hurry.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good.
It's going to be tough to like determine who goes where in that lineup because you have so many options for like every part of it. Like your middle of the order can change, your top of the order can change. Like
it's
obviously
a good problem
lefty
to have.
Oh, 100%. Like obviously lefty righty, you have Bush leading off or Nico leading off or you leading off. Like it's a fun, like you said, very good problem to have. And I think Tom texted us, and that's the first I saw of it. And I was pumped.
The ability here, as just I wrote the lineup a couple times, the ability to split up the lefties. We talked about this when we talked about it the first time, but whether Bush is hitting somewhere between 1 and 3 and Pete's going to be in there somewhere, the ability to break those guys up so that you don't have a lefty reliever that can come into the pocket. You know, one of the issues that we talked about last year was just when you would have Bush and Tucker too close to each other with Pete. You know, those guys were hitting in the first four together quite a bit in the middle of the year, and it would just present an opportunity for a team to bring in a lefty reliever in a big spot in the seventh or eighth inning. And so having that broken up a little bit with, you know, Nico, Bregman, Saya, Dansby, all crush lefties, Carson Kelly crushes lefties. So all those guys to be able to break that up is awesome. It's going to be, you know, the infield. Now you look around, you got Bush, Nico, Dansby, Bregman. Nico, Dansby, Bregman all have a gold glove. Bushy, we know, has been great at first base. The offensive and defensive capability of that infield is pretty special, and that's it's a really good fit for us, but it's just going to make, you know, it's going to make the lineup deeper. Defense is in a great place. Like, it's just... It's a really good move for the depth. And then you have Dansby and Bregman that are going to play together for the next, you know, 4 years. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's the move I said I wanted all offseason. And it was no knock on Matt Shaw, but it was one where, like, if there was an open spot that kind of could be filled, it was at third base with Bregman. And bringing him in, like you said, with like the lineup depth and being able to switch the matchups around. I mean, I think he slots in perfectly to like the 2-hole, but he could also be 3-hole, 5-hole. Like, you know, he's someone you can really put anywhere. And we were talking a little bit ago about his numbers. Like, he strikes out at 12%.
He doesn't strike out. He doesn't strike out, and he still walks. And that was something that Tucker is really good at. There's not a lot of guys that are able to do that. Generally, the guys that walk a ton also have a decent amount of strikeout just because they're deep in counts to get to that point. And he's one of the rare cases where he walks at an 11%, 12% clip and strikes out at a 12% clip. So having him and Nico in the lineup, guys that just don't strike out at all, is the from the contact aspect of that and some of the win challenges at Wrigley of being able to contact at a premium. It's great.
And I think the two things, like, there's reports that the Red Sox offered like 5 for $165 and then Bregman wanting a full no trade in his contract. It's like, that proves to me that like he wanted to be in Chicago. Like, that's who he wanted to go to all along. I know the Cubs were talking to him last year before he signed with the Red Sox, and it's just cool to see, like, you get the guy, your team gets the deal done for a guy that wants to be there and a guy that, like, your team can really use. And like we said, makes your lineup disgusting.
Not a lot of downside to that move. That's
no. And it's a lot of money, but like we said, like, we've looked at his numbers and like gold glove winner, like, he's someone that's worth around that much money. And like, someone was going to give it to him one way.
Yeah.
Or
that's
another.
The market value. Like, somebody was going to pay him that, you know, whether it was us or the Red Sox or the Tigers, somebody was going to pay that number. You know, we know the reports of what the Tigers offered him last year before he ended up signing with Boston. And, you know, a guy like that, if you're going to get the player, you have to pay him. And
the one thing I thought with Bregman that was really interesting is, do you guys know how many playoff games he's played in?
A lot.
47.
102.
Okay. I wasn't even close.
He's got almost 450 plate appearances in the playoffs. I mean, that type of playoff experience cannot be bought. And the fact that you guys are able to bring someone in like that coming off of a year like you guys just had where you make a deep playoff run, that can only help. And we've talked about it for a long time, Dakota. We've wanted to see, frankly, I'll put it bluntly, this ownership group prove that they want to win. This is a win now move from this ownership group that we've asked a lot of, and you have to give them credit in this moment for going all in on this team And we'll talk about the trade in a second too, because that is, I think, a part of this as well. That was the first sign. I think, Dakota, you said this, that they were making a signal to intent that, hey, we're going all in with this team. Bregman's the second part of that move, and you really have to give credit to the organization for doing it. It'll be interesting to see how it works out. I have some concerns, if I'm 100% honest, but I'm excited to get Bregman here.
What are your concerns?
He is an older player, 32.
That's not
Whoa,
old,
whoa, whoa.
brother. That's not old. That's
I'm
prime.
young, prime
That's in the
age.
prime.
It's a 5-year deal.
The
It's the
thing is,
longest.
real quick, in baseball, that isn't like when you get contracts. The sad part is like
No,
that's
you're
not
right.
that
32
old.
is
That's
very
the sad
typical for
part.
this, yes.
That's the sad part. Yeah. Sorry, keep going.
I guess there's just some question in my head, and like this is the stuff that maybe we don't need to discuss right off the top. This is maybe a discussion for next week or down the line. But there is some question in my mind about why this move wasn't done last year. This feels like this type of move was on the table last year. Maybe you're telling me the Cubs wanted to get a look at Matt Shaw. That was maybe the reason they didn't offer this deal. Maybe they didn't want to do deferred money last year. We don't know. I don't know for sure. But it would have liked this deal a little bit better at Bregman age 31 than at Bregman age 32. That's just my only concern. It's a great deal. You have to do the extra year to get it done. I give credit to this ownership group for doing it. I just. You do have to point that out, I think.
It's a fair point. I just think, like you said, I'm just happy that they've showed, all right, we're all in. Because I think a big thing is a lot of the guys on the roster, like looking through the lineup, other than like PCA is still super young and everyone's young. Ian's young. Yeah, Ian's young. But like most of the roster is like you have your guys under contract. You know what I mean? Like you have like a mid-30s team of like we're not an up-and-coming team. Like this is a team where you either go all in or
Sure.
you sell.
This is
So.
a deal that if it's going to be a good deal, you need to win in the first 3 years. The last 2 years probably won't matter that much. I completely understand that. My only thing is, and let me just ask you this straight up, who would you have rather had? Because Ian obviously can't answer this. Would you rather had Bo Bichette or would you rather had Bregman? I think most people are picking Bregman. I think I might have picked Bichette. I don't know.
I would rather have Bo Bichette.
I don't know though, but I think it's definitely a question that you could argue up both sides of.
I think the big thing that you just mentioned is his postseason experience is another huge thing in Bregman's favor. What is Bichette like, 29?
28, I believe.
28. So yeah, I would obviously rather have the younger. I think skill set wise, like they're comparable too.
The difference is probably Bregman's better defensively, but he plays a lesser defensive position. Now, obviously, if you're getting Bichette, you're probably moving him off. You're not going to replace Dansby, so you're moving him somewhere else.
Yeah.
But I just thought if I was going to pick between the two, I probably would have rather had Bichette. But again, I'm splitting hairs here on it. I don't want to rain on the parade because I do love this deal. I love the deal ownership going all in. I just have like a little bit of trepidation that I have to be honest
I
about.
also have to imagine Bichette's contract would have to have come with more years and more money, you
That's
know?
a fair point.
Like it would have
I
had to
guess
been more.
it's not completely equal because you don't know what Bichette would have accepted. I
We'll
don't think
see.
he
We'll see
accepted
when he
five
gets
for
a deal.
175.
Yeah. When he gets a deal, we'll be able to compare. And like if he gets like 8 for 240 or whatever, I'd be like, well, I don't know if the Cubs were going to give him that. So, you know,
And I
if he
probably would rather have
accepts.
Bregman at 5 for 175. So I mean, it's fair
Yeah.
point. It's close though.
But I will say, just strictly off the player, I probably would have picked Bichette, but it's very comparable.
Yeah.
Ian, Edward Cabrera.
You want to talk about Edward Cabrera? So do
I'd
I.
love
And you know
to.
who else does? Bruce Bolt. Brucebolt.us. Go to Brucebolt.us. Season's around the corner. Get your batting gloves. If you're trying to get out on the golf course, get your golf clubs. Brucebolt.us. Use code HAP at checkout for free shipping. Owen Casey, great kid, going to be a really good player. Gets traded to the Marlins. He'll play right field for them every day. Good move. And we get Edward Cabrera back. 3.53 ERA last year. 686 OPS against. His walk rate was down, throws 97 from the right side, fastball sinker. His changeup is 94 and a half average.
Gross.
That's nasty. He's been really good. He's been really, really good against righties. Fastball's gotten hit a little bit against lefties. So at that sinker changeup mix, obviously he threw the most innings of his career last year, made 26 starts and threw, I think, 140 innings, something like
Yeah, it was
that.
around there.
There's been some injury stuff, but he is very talented, faced him a decent amount. He's very talented. He has the stuff, it's electric stuff, and a big right-handed arm that fits into our rotation. very, very nicely. So the rotation now looks like some combination of Boyd, Horton, Cabrera, Taillon, Shota, with Steele coming back.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too. Like, when Steele comes back, another good problem to have is, oh, no, we have six starters. Like, yep. That's a good problem to have. Because, you know, like, in a 162-game season, knock on wood, hopefully no one gets hurt, but it's very unlikely all five starters make 30-plus starts. Like, it's just not the way the world works, unfortunately, in baseball. So it's one of those where, like, I don't know what Steele's timeline is, but like I'm guessing it's probably close to midseason. So when he's ready to come back, like, that's going to be a huge boost. But with Cabrera, like you said, of how lefties hit his fastball a little bit, I bet it's another one of those, like we talk about all the time, of the Cubs are probably going to work with him and be like, we can add this pitch or do this to get lefties out. Like, maybe it's, hey, four seams up in the zone, or they teach him a cutter running in on the hand. So I'm sure they have ways to, like, kind of combat, like, hey, you get hit around by lefties a little bit. Like, here's how we fix that. So,
yeah. And if there's one pitch that they handle well, it's like, all right, how can we adjust where you're throwing that or the usage? If you do, I don't like a six-man rotation. Not a fan of it. Just going to be honest.
Neither. But me neither.
If you do, you know, how many starts you need between these six guys, you need 27 starts a piece between six guys to get through 162. Like, you're gonna,
look at last year, you guys had basically two starters down in April. You know, like, you pretty quickly, Colin Ray went from bullpen arm to in the rotation. So,
goat, he's gonna be the closer this year.
The closer, wow, you're calling that?
That's
now?
My goat, that's my goat forever. any role, you put him in any role, compete.
I really like the way, and you know, C-Ray is also, you know, he's going to be in our bullpen. He's another guy that gives you length and options. But I really like the way that Cabrera's pitch mix plays with our guys.
Mm-hmm.
The two righties that we have, you know, Cade is throwing 97-mile-an-hour cut fastballs, where Cabrera's a guy that's sinking it, so it's going the other way. And then J-Mo is a lesser in the velocity category. You know, he's 92, but he is the ultimate ability to locate and use and throw six pitches for strikes and, you know, think his way through a lineup and use his stuff that way. So the way that the different arms, different righties play, I think is awesome. Plus you have Boyd as the, like, lefty drop down, and Steele is a cut four guy, and then Shota with the splitter. So they're all different looks, and I think it really complements our pitching staff. So I was really high on that move.
For sure. And like Tom said, it was the move that happened first, and it was the one where I was like, this tells me they're all in. Just because leading up to, like, this offseason, it was kind of like Owen Casey is the right fielder in waiting, and now that Tucker's gone, like, he's probably going to split time in right field with Seo while one DHs or however they wanted to play it. But by moving Casey for a starting pitcher like that, like, that's telling me, all right, the time is now. Like, we need this insurance here. We're going to go get our guy. And Edward Cabrera was talked about in the trade market to, like, six different teams for the entire offseason. So being able to get the deal done was great.
If you're a good player on the Marlins, you should assume at some point in the next 2 years, you're going to end up on the trade market.
Yes.
Kyle Stowers, your time, the time is, the clock is ticking.
I'm calling it now. Peter Fairbanks will be a Cub come August. No offense, Marlins fans. But trading,
I don't think any Marlins fans.
I don't think so. I was going to say that.
Marlins fan listening right now is low.
I was going to say that. I do think trading Casey, my only issue was he seemed, other than Shaw, who played a lot more, but, like, he seemed, like, very ready to take that next step of getting a lot more big league at bats and playing, maybe not every single day, but, like, playing 80 games this year. So he's someone that, good for him, like, he's going to go to Miami and probably play a ton, and we'll get to see how he does. But I was kind of hoping it'd be anybody but him of the prospect world, just because I feel like he was ready to be that guy of, like I said, platoon with Seiya in right field and, like, DH at times. Like, I liked what I saw from him in the past.
I think in any other organization, not any other organization, but I think in a lot of organizations last year, maybe let's say 20 of 30, he gets a lot of major league at bats last year.
Yes.
He was clearly a guy that was ready for major league at bats. Unfortunately, with the way the Cubs outfield was last year, there wasn't a lot of at bats to give him. I agree with you, Dakota. I watched a lot of Iowa last year, and he was the number one guy that I was like, I think in terms of prospects, he was the one I would want to keep the most. He's also going to have an opportunity to play for Team Canada coming up here in the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah.
I wouldn't surprise me to see him succeed in that and kind of use that as maybe a launching pad. I was hoping that was going to be for the Cubs. So it is a bummer. And I, the other thing I go back to is it's what's so hard about scouting is Cabrera's really not thrown over 100 innings other than the last season. He has a very limited sample size. And that is a risky profile to acquire in a trade like this when you're giving up a prospect like Casey, because it has the potential to go very negatively. It also has the potential to work out really, really well. I'm personally a guy that's a little bit risk averse of those profiles because I like to see the track record of success, but it's why scouting is so hard, because you could easily understand why the Cubs love this guy and why they made this deal. But also, I just it the when you go look at the baseball reference and you see the lack of innings, it does some alarm bells go off in my head.
But
It's
it's the
also
right it's I'm sorry, Dakota. I'm just
no,
going to
you're
jump in
good.
really quick. It's the right time to make that move because you have the starting pitching depth. Like when you
True.
have a year where you have, hey, we have six legitimate starters, and then Colin Ray, who we saw how good he was last year and has
And
the
even like
ability,
Assad, if needed.
and yeah, and
And
Assad,
Ben
like the
Brown. We didn't say Ben Brown either.
and Jordan Wicks, like you have so many guys, you
No, you're
have
100% right, and that's why it's
depth.
worth the risk. It's just a gamble. It's 100% a little bit of a gamble on a guy like this. But you see the track record, and you see why the Cubs want to gamble on a guy like this. Because if it works out, the best case scenario of a guy like this is a top of the line, number one, number two type starter. And that's why you do the deal.
I think my two things. One, I completely understand if like you want to see the track record. I think the only issue is obviously like if he had 3 years of 180 plus innings, the price
The
tag's a
price is
lot
way
higher.
higher. The
Yeah,
price is
it's like, all
way
right,
higher.
you're probably
100%.
adding in two more prospects and maybe even like a big league player. Well, Casey is a big leaguer, but the other thing I love about it compared to, not to knock it, but the Tucker trade of a 1 year deal is you have Cabrera for 3 more years. Like he's still in arbitration for 2 more years after this one, which I am a big fan of seeing that of like we'll take him through his age 30 season. He's 28 right now. So that was another like good part for me of this isn't a rental. Like this is a guy that hopefully stays healthy, can dominate, and like you're going to have him for 3 years before he's even a free agent.
Really good point.
Thank you. Thanks. I do my research and look at me. Look at me go. But yeah, I mean, all in all, from both the moves, it just fired me up to see the Cubs go for it. Because obviously, Ian plays for the Cubs. Tom and I are big Cubs fans now. Like, you want your teams to go for it. We say it all along. Like, the Blue Jays are going for it. You love that. The Dodgers, they pay everyone $1 billion, but they're going for it. Like, as a fan, that's all you can ask for of. With prospects, it's such a guessing game of what are they going to turn into? Like you never truly know. So I was okay with that trade, and then the Bregman move was one that just fired me up even more. Like seeing your team go all in, that's all you can ask for.
I do want to talk just briefly about roster construction where we sit today. So I don't have all the Penn guys on here.
Real quick. This is no, it's part of this. It's part of what you're saying. Is Thielbar under contract with the Cubs? Am I dumb?
We signed him, yeah.
When was that?
I don't know, a few weeks ago.
Oh, I didn't
He's
even know that.
fantastic.
I missed that somehow. That's huge. Because I saw like a tweet about it that was just saying like Cubs projected roster and it said Thielbar. I was like, did they sign Thielbar? Did I miss that?
Yeah, Thielbar,
I love that.
Miller. Besides the bullpen, let me go. I'm going away from the bullpen. Going to position players. Okay. All right. You have the lineup, which we're fairly certain on what the lineup's going to look like. That DH spot is a little open. You got Ballesteros.
Real
You got
quick,
some
I'll run
options
through
there.
it. Ian Happ left field, PCA center field, Sayer right field, Michael Bush first base, Nico Horner second base, Dansby Swanson shortstop, Alex Bregman third base, Carson Kelly slash Miguel Amaya catching.
Okay. So now your bench looks like, without putting anybody in the DH spot, your bench is, we'll assume that Carson is catching. So you have Amaya, Tyler Austin, Matt Shaw, and then you put
The Jaguar.
Ballesteros there. And then, so now you have, is Kevin the fourth outfielder, or is there another, guy that can play center field, outfield option? And then,
You'd imagine Alcantara will be there, and there'll probably be a signing or two that'll compete with him for that fourth
I
spot,
was going to
and probably a
say,
signing or two that'll compete with Shaw for an infield spot.
yeah, it's just that the lineup or the roster is very full now. From a point a couple, 48 hours ago or before the trade for Cabrera, there was a lot of like, what are the Cubs going to do this offseason? Now it's pretty set now. Everything's pretty set, which is
And
great.
this is the kind of move that maybe if you're a veteran bat that is, like Turner last year, where you're like, maybe I'm ready for a bench role. This is the type of team that you're more willing to do a bench role type of deal with now because you believe, hey, this is a playoff contender. I want to be around this team. I want to be a part of it, even if
That's
I
what
don't have as big of a role.
I was going to say. I foresee like an outfielder, like a veteran outfielder that has played like a lot of games going in and like being the fourth outfielder, or like competing with Alcantara for that fourth outfield spot. Like you said, Tom, of you see this move and you're like, these guys are going to be pretty good. I'll go play there.
Yeah. I mean, teams, I think in general, I'm not speaking about the Cubs. I'm speaking in general. Teams, especially in April, don't love the idea of let's have one of our prospects sit and watch a bunch of baseball. You
Correct.
know, there's a lot of teams that, even though, yes, could a prospect be your bench piece for sure, but they would rather sign someone in April, May, June, and let that prospect get at bats for the first few months of the year. And then if a decision needs to be made, if a call needs to happen, then they can do that and they have that flexibility versus we're just going to let this guy be on the bench and maybe he doesn't get an opportunity to play very often.
You know what I would kill for, and Ian's going to get so fired up over this. Let's bring Jay Hay back home. Let's bring him
Oh.
back to be the fourth outfielder. Wouldn't that be sick?
He would be unbelievable
That'd
on the
be
bench.
incredible. Because again, like it's someone where your fourth outfielder, especially obviously health, all the health stuff aside, like you, PCA, and Saya, like Saya might DH so a little bit, but like it's going to be you three playing the outfield 150 games if everyone's healthy. So it's something where you don't need a ton. It's just like giving guys a day here and there, like putting say in the DH a day here and there, putting someone in right field for it. Like it's not someone that needs to come in and you expect a ton from. So there's a lot of like, I'm just kind of looking through the outfielders right now. Like there's a lot of options of guys that are veterans that would be a good fit for that role of you're not asking them to play every day. You're just asking them to like be there when needed.
And it's interesting. There's kind of two routes you can go with that. Do you want to go for a very specialized guy? Do you want like a Billy? I'm just not this exact player exists, but a Billy Hamilton's kind of speed guy. Do you want someone that's like he's not going to get that many at bats, probably the fourth outfielder, or do you want someone who's more well-rounded, kind of someone who can kind of go play all three outfield spots and is going to hit 240, and it's not going to do anything remarkable, but it's just kind of out there to be solid and steady. Like a Mike Tauchman type.
I was just going to say Talkman's on this list of remaining free agents. I was like,
Yeah.
Tom would be fired up.
I'd love a reunion.
Do we just get crazy greedy and go get Belly? I don't know. I'm just saying, let's get out of control here. Let's
Wait,
get
can I? We
insane.
just learned about deferred money. Let's defer all of it.
Defer
One
everything.
dollar to Bregman, $1 to Bellinger, rest of it deferred.
Perfect. Let's get insane, Tom. I'm in.
Can I make one comment about that? For
About
your team, Tom,
which part? Oh, the
how
Yankees.
do you think this signing affects the Yankees Bellinger conversations?
Were the Yankees that in on Bregman? I didn't. I never felt
Well,
like Bregman
no,
was going to be a
I
Yankee
think it would be more.
in the
There was
market.
some swirling rumors that the Cubs were revisiting Bellinger. You have to assume now where the payroll sits, close to the luxury tax or just over, that the Cubs are out on Bellinger.
Yes.
How much does that mean that the Yankees can continue to hold their position and wait for Bellinger to say yes to whatever they've offered?
Dakota said there was going to be one guy that's going to have a long wait. I thought it might be Bregman. Now that Bregman signed, it's starting to feel like it's going to be Bellinger, is the guy that's going to sign very late into camp. And it might be with the Yankees. You're right. It might be they stare at each other, and finally on March 4th, somebody breaks and somebody says, "All right, I'll take that." Because they're both going to have their numbers, right? They're probably going to be whatever, 20, 25 million apart. And then finally somebody's going to go, "All right, I'll what about here's move 5 million and we'll do it."
Yeah, I agree. I'd be, I it does feel like it could be Belly, because I feel like I haven't heard him linked to like any other teams.
There isn't that many landing spots left that make that much sense that would pay him. Unless again, unless the people are gonna go crazy on the deferred money, you know, but that's it is an interesting wrinkle where it's like, could someone get wild with it?
Well, and anyone offering Belly's probably also like in talks with Tucker, right? Like similar guys of, if you're talking to one, you might be talking to the other. And from the reports, Bellinger's asking for close to the same as what Tucker's asking. So it's like you kind of pick which one you want, and then who's gonna like pony up? Because I feel like your prom dates are running low now of who's gonna offer them the money they want. You know what I mean? Like the Blue Jays don't have enough money to get these guys now. The
They're
Dodgers
running
seem
out of
to. Oh,
corsages. You better make sure that
yes.
you get one.
Well, because now like the Dodgers seem to have unlimited money, but like, are they going to give one of these guys 300, 400 million? Like, I don't think
Dodger's
so.
dad owns a flower shop. They have so many corsages that you can't believe it. You're like, how do they
Yeah.
have another corsage? No
That's true.
way.
That's true.
The Yankee fit for Bellinger to me is just, it's too good
Yeah,
with
it's
a
perfect.
first base, center field, corner
Or
outfield
porch.
option.
That's the thing.
Like,
It's like,
it's
what are the
just.
Yankees' areas of weakness right now? First base. Center field, like, oh, it's like, oh, if it makes sense, we get like another lefty bat wouldn't hurt, you know, all the stuff with Bellinger.
It just seems too perfect for it not to work out. I just can't see them letting him walk somewhere else, which is, it's that time of year where, like, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, like, you got to think that they're gonna, someone's got to cave on that side.
I was just gonna say, you've said it before too, of like what the Dodgers are doing used to be what the Yankees would do. Of like, if they wanted their guy, they would just, here's the money you want, you're our guy. So like, it's kind of strange to see them not do that with Belly or Tucker, of like, hey, we need this guy, we want this guy, here's your contract.
This is my favorite thing to talk about, Dakota. This is the WFAN fan theory of if George Steinbrenner was still alive,
He
if
would
George
be.
was alive, Kyle Tucker would have been on the Yankee 2 months ago. And that there's a subset of New Yorkers that genuinely believe that. Now, whether or not that's actually true, I don't know. Because like some of that Steinbrenner stuff, it was a little overblown. And you also have to remember, like, there's a long stretch where the Steinbrenner owns the Yankees, the 80s into the mid-90s, where they're terrible. You know, my dad's favorite player is Don Mattingly. Don Mattingly not didn't win anything. You know, was the captain of the Yankees for 15 years, won nothing. So the Steinbrenner way, you know, he fired Billy Martin 5 times and then kept reuniting with him. So, you know, there was also downsides to that as well. I don't know if the Yankees would have signed Tucker. Like the Tucker market is the one I can't figure out. I have no idea where he's going. Feels like it's going to be a mystery team to me. It's going to be like some very random thing. You're going to be like, really? There?
I could see, yeah, because I mean, like, you could name any team, like,
Can you see like the
really any.
Rangers? I'm just like throwing like the Rangers. Somebody, you're like, what? The Rangers? Like, it wouldn't even make sense.
Like, anyone other than the New Yorks or LA, anywhere else, I'd be like, huh? Like, they've paid him that much? I could, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe like the Tigers. I feel like they've been offering contracts.
Tigers? I was just like, what if Stevie Cohen just gets in his mind that he wants Kyle Tucker? But
That's
they
what I
already have
mean.
Soto. Like, I don't. What do you do? I mean, they traded Nimmo though. I don't know.
I don't know. We're in that time of year where it seems like there's going to be a flurry in the next few weeks, but you have, correct me if I'm wrong on any of these, but you have Tucker, Bellinger, Bichette out there, and those are kind of the three big dominoes on the position player side that need to fall. And then you have Suarez, Bader, some of those other guys that haven't signed yet and are going to get pretty decent contracts. And then you have Framber and Suarez from the pitching side that we haven't heard much of anything about.
Anything, yeah. It is weird because, like you said, that's a list of pretty big names that are supposed to get a lot of money, which leads me to believe there's over half of them are going to have to take short-term deals. Like, there's just no way all those guys are going to get 4+ year deals because there's just not enough teams out there to pay that kind of money right now. Like, I don't know.
Sorry, I was gonna say it's not a market where it feels like they're waiting on Tucker or they're waiting
No.
on Bichette. You know, it doesn't sometimes it's like, oh, they're clearly all waiting on Soto and then the dominoes are gonna fall. I don't really think they're connected this year. Like I think the
No.
Tucker signing doesn't really impact, you know, the same thing with Bichette, same thing even with the Bellinger one, I think. And so it's weird that we haven't re about the pitchers. Feels like we've heard almost nothing. Nothing.
Maybe just Bellinger and Tucker could affect each other just strictly because they're like similar positions of like, well, if the Yankees go get Tucker, I'd say that puts them out of the market for Bellinger. You know what I mean? But other than that, yeah, like money wise, I don't feel like any of them are like a domino effect of once this guy goes, these other four are going to go.
Have the Nats said that they're not trading Mackenzie Gore?
I don't think I've seen that they were like shutting it down.
I wonder if that trade market is slowing down the two left-handed starters.
It could
like
be.
If teams were out there trying to add a starter and Cabrera and Gore were kind of Joe Ryan, like maybe teams are like, well, we'll see if, because there was that one offseason years ago where the Marlins traded away all of their outfielders.
Yeah.
Yelich and Ozuna and everybody and Real Muto. And like the free agent market was stopped because everybody was waiting for the trades to go through. Mm-hmm. And they were all bidding and trade trying to get those players. So none of the free agents were getting signed because teams thought that they could trade for the players instead of sign free agents. And that was, you know, that was the time that the trade market kind of stopped free agency. I don't know that that's exactly what's happening here, but it's just, it's strange that we haven't heard more on those starting pitchers.
Yeah, it's been like silent on, but I haven't heard of like any teams even in talks of like this number has been thrown around, like nothing.
There was a small linkage of the Orioles with Framber and like that's it.
This is where I wish there was like one big place that I could just go to and see like this team offered this guy this. You know what I mean? Like I wish you had to disclose everything of like they were offered.
I don't understand what you mean at all. Do you mean like a library? Like I want to hear more about this idea.
It's not what like
building.
I just want them to have to tell us like this is how much this team offered this player.
Because it's all made up.
Because otherwise it's like we said before, like agents will just say stuff like, oh, there's a mystery team talking to Kyle Tucker. It's like, okay, is that supposed to scare a team into signing him? Like they do that just to try to scare teams into being like, uh-oh, who's the mystery team coming in?
Wait, there's one thing that we haven't covered that we have to cover before this episode ends. Arbitration. The arbitration deadline came and went. I didn't even know it was happening because it usually happens over the CubsCon weekend. So it happened and I was like, oh my God, I thought it was going to be next weekend because it's always CubsCon weekend. It was not this year. And I think there's like 13 cases-ish that are guys going to hearings. But the big one, Skubal has a massive $13 million gap. The team that the Tigers filed at $19 million and he filed at $32 million. This is a fascinating one.
I texted you about it. I was like, have you ever seen that big of a discrepancy?
It's the biggest gap ever. Soto set the record, I believe, in arbitration at $30 or $31 million when he settled with the Yankees. This would be the largest single season jump in an arbitration from year to year ever. The previous pitcher record was 1975 with David Price, which I think was in 2011?
2015.
And it's if you look at them together, if you look at David Price's career and Skubal's, it's an interesting comp. The back-to-back Cy Young thing is tough to ignore, and his dominance over the last 2 years. But man, that is a big gap. I mean, it's a massive portion of the Tigers' payroll.
Yeah. The two keys for me, one, like important for people to know, is like when they go to arbitration, can a deal still get done before arbitration? Yes. So they can still negotiate? Okay. But like if it goes to arbitration, isn't it essentially the arbitrator needs to decide if he's worth more than $25.5 million or less than $25.5 million?
Because
if
it's
any number, yeah, it's like whatever's in the middle, it needs to be above or below, and that side wins.
Yep.
My issue with it, which I texted you guys, was what makes me mad about the whole system of arbitration is that Tarik Skubal, if he was a free agent today, would be making $35 million plus AAV without a shadow of a doubt to me. Like there would be teams lined up at the door to pay him $40 million AAV.
So that's where there's a weird part of arbitration where last year's number is factored into this year's number. Where
yes,
you're an ARB 1 the first year, you're not making that much, and then because you only made 1.8 the first year, even though you had a great year and you're going to jump up, you're not going to jump up that much because the 1.8 is being factored in. It is, there's a weird, that's kind of the weird part of the system. And that's going to be something that's up for discussion in this next CBA is if arbitration is going to stay. The owners are pushing very hard to get rid of it, I think.
But they wanted to go to a strictly war-based system, but then you have to calculate how much is a win worth and then all this stuff. And then can guys go up and down? If a guy's worth 5 wins 1 year and then has a 3-win season, is he worth less than he was the year prior? What they proposed definitely wasn't perfect or great. But arbitration, it still works to get players closer to their full value, but there are definitely things, I think, from when the process started to now, including just the way the process is handled, that are probably not exactly as it was intended. But this is going to be a really interesting one. And especially the first thing that I thought about is how this will impact Skeens. Like, this decision is going to very directly impact how Paul Skeens gets paid in the next few years.
Yes. And it will be interesting to see the contract Tarik Skubal gets. He's a free agent after this year. That will also be interesting to see.
It is almost like a court. It's like the Supreme Court in some ways, where it relies a lot on precedent and relies on what other people have done, what previous contracts have looked like. And I think that's what makes the Skubal one so unique, is that we talked about there really there's one case from 15 years, 10 years ago, excuse me, that has any relevance to this at all. The only other one that we talked about was DeGrom. You mentioned he went up by 9.6 year over year. That's the biggest jump ever. Obviously, he's looking for a $13 million bump. So, but again, that's 7, 8 years ago. How does inflation, there's all these different factors that get into this, where it's like, because there hasn't been a recent relevant case to compare it to, the arbitration panel may go in a bunch of different directions. And it's not really, it's going to be a very precedent setting decision, as you said, that will affect schemes a lot.
I think Lincecum was the only guy to go through arbitration winning back-to-back Cy Youngs. And I think it was earlier in his process. I think it was Arb 1 or 2 that he did it. So it wasn't in the last year of Arb, which is obviously when the numbers are bigger and the gaps are bigger. This is going to be a crazy one. My prediction, if I want to give my prediction, it's that they settle before this thing goes to trial
I
because
think
it's
so
too
too.
big of a gap for the Tigers to take the risk on. But I bet you they settle it
24,
somewhere between
25.
25 and 27.
So just to clarify really quick, so if the arbitration decides, the panel, the people decide that the Tigers number is closer, then he gets 19. But if they even if they think the value is somewhere in the middle,
Yeah,
yes,
they can't.
it's
It's one
absolute
or the
one way or
other.
the other.
It's the Tigers win and he gets 19, or he wins and he gets 32.
Even if they think the number's like 25 and a half,
Yep.
but just because it's a little bit close, that's so crazy.
Well, and two things. I think Tom said it. He's like, how in arbitration, basically, teams try to say all the reasons you're bad of like why they shouldn't have to pay you. Like Tom goes, I would love to hear how the Tigers say this guy isn't good. Like, what do you say? Like, he's not
Let me
good.
tell
How?
you, the guy in the Detroit Tigers front office that got the assignment to make the pitch deck and slide deck about, hey, you're on Scooble opposition research. Oh, okay. Let me go find the Scooble bad stats from the last few
They're
years.
probably looking, they probably got a PI of like, yeah, he cheated on a test in high school. Like, we can't trust this guy.
The thing that's pretty interesting about the way it's done now is that I would say almost every team, if not every single team, outsources all of this work. So they get an outside law firm, and the outside law firm is the one that does the front office doesn't even really deal with it. They show up to the hearing, but it's pretty rare now that someone from the front office even speaks. It's just completely outside counsel and Major League Baseball and their attorneys that crush the player.
And the
So it's
player's
not
on the call, correct?
What?
The player's usually on the call.
Oh
They hear
yeah,
it
you're
all, right?
there. And this used to be in person, but now, I think now it's all via Zoom. But yeah, you're sitting there listening to it.
Is it like a full panel, or is it like one person
It's three
determines the fate?
arbitrators.
Oh, so then they like vote at the end, obviously. Interesting. I would love to hear, if this goes to arbitration, I'd love to just hear the case of like, what would
Could
the
you
Tigers
imagine if they
say?
like MLB released on like
Yeah.
MLB
You
Network, they're
could
like
watch it. Oh my
Tarik Skubal
God. Can you imagine
arbitration
if you
tape?
can watch it?
Yeah,
That would be
live. That'd be so
appointment
sick.
television.
100%.
How much would you pay in a pay-per-view to watch that? I think I'd pay like $30 to watch it.
I was gonna say like $100.
This, I mean, this could be,
it'd be insane.
Okay, here's the idea. It's pay-per-view and the player gets to keep 70%.
Deal.
That's a great deal. Maybe that'll make up for when he loses the case.
That's a great deal.
Whoever loses gets to keep the pay-per-view.
It's just, and Ian went through it, obviously, as we know, but like, it's such a crazy concept to me of like, you have to go to this meeting and listen to, like you said, they outsource it, but it's still coming from your team that you are working for, telling you all the reasons why you're not good enough to get this much money. And then you just have to go to work the next day, whether you win or lose, and play for that team. And then and you
it's
just
in
sit
spring
there
training.
And,
it's like, right. Yeah. It's like right before spring training. And then you show up, you either win or lose, and then you show up to spring training. I found out that I won my hearing on the plane to Arizona for spring training.
That's insane. And it was the day after your arbitration hearing? Or no, how long does like, it take once they have it?
Because they hold the results until all of the cases are done, so they don't influence the other cases.
Oh, okay.
Like there could be a situation where like Glaber and I were going through at the same time, right? And if my case gets decided, that Glaber can use it as a comp, or so they hold all of the cases until
smart.
They're all
makes
done.
Sense. Yeah, it makes sense.
Wait, so the outside lawyers, I think that part's so interesting because I would have assumed the team does it. Are they outside lawyers? Are they talking baseball? Like, are they talking statistics? Are what is their full-time job? Are they like contract negotiators? Like, how does the team feel like they're qualified to talk about baseball?
I was going to say, Tom wants their credential.
I don't know. That's a good question.
I just would like be so curious how you get that job because you have to know about baseball. You know, like obviously very well to argue a case like that.
Yeah, I think
and if you don't work for the team, that's got to be weird.
There's probably a handful of firms that specialize in it, but I don't know the exact background of like the lawyer that was telling me that it was trash.
I wish you recorded yours. I would love to hear it just out of curiosity. You probably don't like to think about it.
I think Ian has a permanent recording in his memory. I think he's seen it record and hasn't forgotten about it.
I told you guys after. They was not, I'd heard a lot of horror stories and I know guys who have had really tough ones. And obviously like the Betances one was very publicly challenging with the Yankees. I didn't have that experience. The Cubs and the way it was handled was were there points where I disagreed with what was said or put on a slide? Yes. But there wasn't a point in the hearing where I wanted to flip my chair and say, how could you?
Well, and two things. One, isn't it like you don't speak at it, correct? Like you, the player. You don't say a word, right? Like you're just sitting there, just kind of
just sitting
out
there, trying not to make any faces.
Yes, and then two, don't they bring in like personal life stuff too? Like if someone's like a problem off the field, no.
Not, I mean, not for me.
I'm saying in general, of like if someone, whatever, like had trouble with the law in any way, like isn't that brought up as part of like? Couldn't that be brought in as like a reason you deserve less money, or is it strictly what happens on the field?
Yeah, I don't know if they would do that. I think that I don't know that the arbitrators would look kindly on that, because there is part of it where you're talking to three humans and you're trying to make sure that all of your slides, like you're trying to make sure there isn't anything in there that they would deem like irrelevant.
Yeah, because I
would only have a certain amount of time.
I would agree, because like your personal life has nothing to do, like this process is strictly like your play on the baseball field. Is it worth this much money or not? So I was just curious if like that is part of it.
I've definitely heard of times where a team will try to argue that, you know, this player was the reason why we didn't win a playoff game or something like that. And it's like, that's
insane.
That's not
in
nice.
A baseball game. One guy.
Yeah. What do you mean? Well,
the whole process.
This has been a great episode. This has been one of our best. We had a lot to talk about. Let's get the people of Sloan screen time before we go. Sloan is the world's leading manufacturer of commercial plumbing systems at the forefront of the green building movement, providing smart, sustainable, hygienic restroom solutions. If you're coming to Mesa this year to see some games at Sloan Park, make sure you visit that Sloan tailgate.
Yeah, before I go visit Zach and Scott possibly in Tampa, I got to make sure they got Sloan there. I'm not going.
Yeah, you got to make sure. I had a great experience yesterday when I was watching the Bears game, some Sloan flushers.
Love that. My screen time was 5 hours and 58 minutes. It is a Sunday. We're recording on a Sunday. That's higher than usual.
316 for me. 316. Tom?
That part is that's high for you, Ian.
649.
See, but Tom, like, those are good days for us on a Sunday.
On
like,
a Sunday? Okay. I don't feel bad about them.
No, not at all. It's a Sunday.
No. Great day. Great day. Great app, guys.
Oh, great one app. One last story about my grandma. She literally said to me today, she goes, you know, that screen thing you guys do, you guys are never going to beat Ian. He must cheat. He's a cheater. She's like, you could just say you were on it for 1 minute. Why don't you just say that?
We send pictures to each other every week. Send proof.
She was very fired up, though. She's like, Ian's always going to beat you guys on it. I hate it. And I was like, okay, I'll try.
Yes, they're off your phones, boys. That's episode 292 of the Compound Podcast presented by Parse Rum. Go to Benny's, get your Parse. I'll see you guys at the Compound Live. Any listeners out there, come to the Compound Live. And we'll see you next week.